Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Echo page. Echo membership will provide you with unlimited access to other educational material, as well as a huge number of other advantages. Please check this out at www.echo-ibd.eu.
My name is Charlotte Hedin, and I work at the Karolinska University Hospital in Stockholm, Sweden. Pouchitis occurs in approximately 40% of patients in the 5 years after ileal pouch anal anastomosis for chronic ulcerative colitis, and in 10 to 15% of patients, refractory pouchitis develops. After pouch surgery, the primary function of the terminal ileum changes from absorption to storage, and bacterial overgrowth occurs, with bacterial concentrations rising to levels which are intermediate between an end ileostomy and the colon. However, pouchitis does not appear to be directly related to the quantity of the bacterial overgrowth. It may be that anaerobic bacterial overgrowth of the pouch is linked mechanistically with pouchitis through causing transformation of the ileal mucosa to a more colon-like morphology, with villus atrophy and chronic inflammatory cell infiltration. The colonic transformed mucosa may then be more prone to developing UC-like inflammation. In addition, although pouchitis may occur in patients who have undergone colectomy for other diagnoses, such as familial adenomatous polyposis, pouchitis appears to occur much less frequently in this group, indicating that the immune dysregulation, which is fundamental to the pathogenesis of the original IBD, is also important in the pathogenesis of pouchitis. The diagnosis of pouchitis is suggested by variable clinical symptoms, including increased stool frequency and looser stool consistency, cramping, tenesmus, incontinence and urgency, and the symptoms often cause significant morbidity for the patient. Strategies directed towards reducing fecal concentrations of anaerobic bacteria through the use of antibiotics is the standard approach to treating acute pouchitis, with alternatives being budesonide enemas, or in mildly active pouchitis, the probiotic combination VSL3 may be used. The disease course of pouchitis varies and may be categorised in various ways. Pouchitis may be defined according to the pathogenesis as idiopathic or secondary. Alternatively, pouchitis may be defined in terms of its time course, for example, as acute versus chronic, with the latter often defined as greater than 4 weeks duration, or based on a disease pattern including infrequent episodic versus relapsing disease versus continuous disease. Finally, pouchitis may be categorised according to the response to antibiotic therapy into antibiotic responsive, antibiotic dependent, or antibiotic refractory pouchitis. The disease course of antibiotic-responsive pouchitis may evolve into antibiotic-dependent pouchitis and then antibiotic-refractory pouchitis. Overall, around 5 to 19% of patients with acute pouchitis eventually develop rapidly relapsing or refractory forms of the disease. Antibiotic-refractory pouchitis is often difficult to treat and is a common cause of pouch failure, resulting in pouch excision or permanent diversion. Refractory pouchitis patients typically do not respond to full-dose, single-agent antibiotic therapy. In this situation, it's important to investigate secondary causes of refractory disease, including the use of NSAID drugs, concurrent Clostridium difficile infection, cytomegalovirus infection, celiac disease and other autoimmune disorders, kyphitis, CD of the pouch ischemia and inflammatory polyps of the pouch. When pouchitis is chronic or refractory, prolonged courses of antibiotics, usually in combination such as metronidazole and ciprofloxacin, are generally first-line therapy, with rifaximin and tinidazole being alternative agents to try in combination. However, maintenance of remission in this group of patients after induction therapy with dual antibiotics remains a challenge. In addition, overuse of antibiotics may explain the possibility that the microflora responsible for pouchitis may shift from conventional to non-conventional forms such as Clostridium, fungi, or even parasites. Second-line treatment options include corticosteroids such as oral beclomethasone or budesonide 9 mg daily for 8 weeks, and azathioprine may be tested in those who become dependent on budesonide. Biologics including infliximab and adalimumab are third-line agents that can be used to treat chronic pouchitis. More than 80% of patients respond to infliximab, with just over 50% of those treated still responding at 20 months. Treatment duration may need to be tailored to the individual patient. Adalimumab may also have efficacy. An open-label study evaluating the effectiveness of vedolizumab in patients with chronic pouchitis has reported in 20 patients and shown a decrease in symptom scores and a decreased requirement for symptomatic co-medications such as loperamide and opiates. This indicates that vedolizumab could be an option in the treatment of patients with chronic, antibiotic-dependent or refractory pouchitis. Alkaforsen enemas may be considered as alternatives to the above therapies. Alkaforsen is a 20-base antisense oligonucleotide to intercellular adhesion molecule 1, or ICAM-1, which is a key intracellular adhesion molecule which regulates leukocyte migration from blood to sites of inflammation within tissue. In 2004, a small open-label study of alkaforsen administered rectally in patients with pouchitis showed promising results. A phase 3 multicenter double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trial of alkaforsen enemas nightly for 6 weeks in subjects with chronic antibiotic refractory pouchitis has completed enrollment, and the results of this study are expected in the first half of 2019. Given its potential to establish a new class of therapy for pouchitis, alkaforsen has been granted FDA Fast Track designation and FDA Orphan Drug designation for this indication. For chronic pouchitis, a Cochrane review in 2015 found that there was evidence to suggest that VSL3 may be more effective than placebo for maintenance of remission, although the quality of the evidence was found to be low. However, another strategy to achieve therapeutic manipulation of the intestinal microbiota is fecal microbiota transplantation, or FMT. It has been shown that the FMT is an effective treatment for recurrent Clostridium difficile infection, with a therapeutic mechanism likely involving the replacement of disease-causing Clostridia with normal healthy microbiome from a donor. A similar rationale could be speculated to apply in pouchitis, where it would be hoped that initiating a change in the intestinal flora in patients could return the pouch mucosa to a healthy state. FMT was tested in an open-label study in 2013, where it was administered daily via nasogastric tube for 4 weeks. No patient went into remission, but two patients reportedly regained sensitivity to ciprofloxacin. However, a subsequent case series found improvement in 4 out of 5 patients with chronic pouchitis who had multiple FMT treatments over 3 to 4 weeks. The results of ongoing and planned double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trials of FMT in the treatment of chronic pouchitis are eagerly awaited.